The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
And we'll start with the Raleigh News and Observer. This article, on gardening, Yuletide Camellia, the landscape's Christmas plant. By Norman Winter. It is hard for the garden guy to imagine a more perfect Christmas plant for the landscape than Yuletide Camellia. When you think about the colors of Christmas, red, green, and gold are front and center, and Yuletide puts them all on display. The green is most obvious, and that is the deep evergreen foliage that would make you want the plant for the bones or structure of your home landscape. Even if it never bloomed, you may be surprised to know they can eventually get 6 to 8 feet tall and wide. The red blooms that are approximately 3 inches wide are the perfect shade for Christmas. They are produced so abundantly, it would be hard to count them all. They start in late October and crescendo into a spectacle by Christmas. Bright golden stamens are produced in the center of the flowers in such quantities they give a dazzling, highly ornamental look to the plant. You'll quickly notice these blossoms seem to be nature's gift to late-season pollinators, bees, and a variety of butterflies. Botanically speaking, Yuletide has forever been considered a Camellia sasanqua, and 90% of the industry sells it that way. It will always be so to the garden guy. In reality, it was a chance seedling of Hiryu, a Camellia vernalis hybrid. I'll do what I usually do and avoid the taxonomic argument like the plague and simply tell you, if you live in zone 7 through 9, this is a must-have plant. Indoors, you must have poinsettias. Outdoors, it is Yuletide Camellia. Yuletide is recommended for full to part sun. Fertile, organic-rich, acidic soil is best. These were the first shrubs planted in my new landscape, and they thrive in heavier soil conditions, but good drainage is paramount. When planting, make holes 3 times the width of the pot and plant with the top of the root ball 1 to 2 inches above the soil surface. Don't count on rain, water, and apply a good layer of mulch. Fall is a terrific time to plant, and your local nursery typically has a great selection of camellias this time of year. You'll love the pyramidal habit these camellias have in early years before getting somewhat broader. Though they will eventually reach 6 feet plus, they are nevertheless considered compact. In Columbus, Georgia, they've been used in mixed containers at the finest shopping or lifestyle centers welcoming all who come to shop or eat at the restaurants. In the landscape, they scream to be grown with hollies like Christmas Jewel, a champion in red berry production, or Robin, both of which exhibit their own Christmas tree shape. By all means, add some late-blooming encore azaleas like Autumn Bravo or the shorter Autumn Ruby. See where the garden guy is headed, a landscape peaking in color for your family during the holiday season. But there are a couple of more shrubs I think, would tie it all together. Those are conifers. There is just something about the texture of conifer. A golden conifer, like the 10 to 12 foot Ever Goldie, would echo the color of the bright golden stamens of the Yuletide and stand out in dramatic fashion with the dark green foliage of its companions. Lastly, consider sweeps or drifts of Utopia plum yews, reaching 3 feet tall, adding a fine texture with their short green needles. Yuletide camellia is one of the most beloved shrubs of all time, and perfect for the beginning of your Christmas landscape. Now's the time to shop. Now from Dave's Garden e-newsletter. Lately, we had a leafy wilderness. Now bare twigs begin to prevail. Soon, she will surprise us with a mantle of snow. Some greens she thinks so good for our eyes that, like blue, she never banishes it entirely from our eyes, but has created evergreens. That was said by Henry David Thoreau. How to Care for Poinsettias During the Winter by Shannon Bass. Poinsettias are a beautiful plant used for decorating around the winter holidays. Many people keep them until the blooms fall off, then toss them out. But these plants are great to have around all year long and are easy to care for. One of the most beautiful and well-known plants used for decorations during winter is poinsettia, originally named after the Joel Robert Poinsett, U.S. ambassador who first brought the plant to the U.S. Poinsettia comes from the wilds of Central America, mainly Mexico. The association of this to Christmas actually comes from an old Mexican tale of a little girl who was very poor. Having nothing to offer as a gift for Jesus' birthday, she went into the woods and pulled some weeds that an angel had told her about. She then placed the weeds on the church altar. While the tale did not come to the U.S. with it, the plant still became associated with the holiday because of its bright red and green colors and the fact it only blooms during colder months. Poinsettias come in a variety of colors, pink, red, white, orange, even marbled, though most in stores are red, pink, or white. Poinsettias do not have real flower petals. The parts that change colors and look like blossoms are actually modified leaves called bracts. If you examine it closely, you see there is no difference other than the color from the petals and the green leaves. Even though poinsettias do not technically have flowers, they have chiasia, the yellow parts, in the center of the colored leaves, giving it a flower appearance. The chiasia is the part that holds the pollen for the plant, and as soon as it sheds the pollen, leaves will start to fall off, typically colored ones first. Though it has pollen, it does not attract any pollinators such as bees or butterflies. To care for your plant during winter, keep it away from cold. They are not frost tolerant at all. They should be kept in temperatures between 60 and 70 degrees. Bright light during the day, a little fertilizer when needed, and water. They should be allowed to dry out a little between waterings, but not enough to wilt the stem. Water when the top of the soil is dry to the touch. It's difficult to get poinsettias to bloom more than once, but not impossible. If you're willing to take time and patience to give extra care to your plant, you might be able to get at least one more bloom, possibly more. To do this, it's very important to follow the steps attentively, or it might not work. The first thing, care for it normally, even after the leaves fall off. Around the beginning of April, cut back on the watering, allowing it to dry more before each watering and giving it less water. Don't allow the stems to shrivel. After about 2 weeks, move to a cooler location, somewhere that stays around 60 degrees, like a basement or garage. Near the last week or two of May, prune the plant down where it is only about 4 inches of stem above soil. Remove it from the pot and dispose as much soil as possible. Repot in a new pot if needed, or in the same one with fresh soil. Water enough to completely soak the soil. Allow to drain a few minutes and then water again. Allow to completely drain and set in a window with the brightest amount of sun possible. Do not allow it to touch the glass, as it can get too cold. When it starts new growth, start feeding every 2 weeks with a complete houseplant fertilizer. In mid-June, move it outside. Place in an area that gets plenty of indirect sunlight. It can get direct sun, but more than a couple of hours might be too much at first. By mid-August, the stems should have branched out quite a bit and leaves should be showing. Cut the new stems down to only 3 or 4 leaves each. Bring the plant back inside and put in the bright window again. Continue water and fertilizing regularly. Poinsettias are short day, long night plants. They need less daylight and more darkness to be able to change colors. Starting in October, your plant will need less than 10 hours of light. This is the crucial part. If they receive too much light around this time, it will not bloom. Start putting the plants in complete darkness every night and in the sun during the day. Generally, it's best to have darkness scheduled from 5 p.m. until 8 a.m. You can adjust this a little to fit your schedule if needed. You must stick to the schedule you choose, with little to no adjustments. And from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, carrot varieties. Carrots are such cheery vegetables. Kids go for them almost the same way they love orange sherbet and jack-o'-lanterns. Must be the bright orange color. Most adults feel the same way, too. Even folks who pick up their noses at other vegetables will often munch happily on carrot sticks. Besides tasting good, carrots are packed with nutrients. The saying that carrots are good for your eyes isn't an old wives' tale. Carrots contain a pigment called carotene that converts to vitamin A when you digest it. This vitamin helps us see in reduced light and at night. Breeders have increased the vitamin A content of many newer varieties. Carrots sold in the supermarket can vary from small, yellowish roots to oversized giants that taste awful. There are even new red and purple colored varieties available. With very little air effort, you can grow carrots that look and taste much better than those you see on display in the produce aisles. Carrot varieties range from 3.5-inch little fingers that mature quickly in any kind of soil to 9-inch long imperators that need deep, well-worked soil. Of course, all carrots can be eaten when they're only 2 or 3 inches long. These fingerlings are delectable. Seed companies often have different names for similar varieties, but some characteristics say the same. Varieties. Amsterdam's 65 days. This type grows well in heavy or shallow soil. The 3.5 to 4 inch long roots mature quickly, providing an early crop of sweet, delicate carrots. Chantenay's, 70 days. Stocky, with broad shoulders and tapered roots, 5 to 5.5 inches long, these carrots are easy to pull and tasty. Chantenay's grow well in all soil types and are a good storage type. Nantes, N-A-N-T-E-S, half longs, 70 days. These carrots produce 6 to 7 inch long roots with nearly perfect cylindrical shapes. They're practically coreless and are best eaten fresh. Danvers half longs, 75 days. These bright orange, 7 to 7.5 inch long roots taper to a blunt end. They have a rich flavor and good texture. Round carrots, 50 days. Just 1 to 2 inches in diameter, these carrots mature early and grow easily in hard-packed soil. And from the State by State Gardening Magazine and e-newsletter, White Fringe Tree by Peter Gallagher. White Fringe Tree also answers to the names Grancy Graybeard and Old Man's Beard. It is a member of the olive family, along with forsythia, ash, and lilac. This fine specimen makes a great understory tree or large upright shrub, reaching a height and spread of 20 to 25 feet. It is found in zones 3 through 9. As a matter of recognition, Dr. Michael Durr suggests that the fringe tree would make an excellent candidate for designation as a national shrub or understory tree, carrying itself with such refinement, dignity, and class when in flower. Although the fringe tree will actually tolerate quite a range of soils and exposure, its preference is a fertile, moist, well-drained, organic, acid soil with at least a bit of shelter from intense summer sun. As a species, I associate white fringe tree with such natural companions as flowering dogwood, native azalea, and redbud. It is very much at home at the edge of a wooded area or in the filtered shade of a large canopy tree such as pine and oak. Multi-stemmed specimens are commonly grown, but it can also be used as a single trunk tree form. I prefer it being used in small clusters or groups of plants in a wooded setting. White fringe tree is dioecious, with plants bearing predominantly either male or female flowers. The male flowers are somewhat showier, but the female produces clusters of deep blue fruit drupes in August and September. A few milk cultivars have been selected for superior flowering and sturdy, deep green foliage. Notable cultivars include Emerald Night, Prodigy, and Spring Fleecing. These cultivars are not offered in all areas, however. With that, I would highly recommend the species for most any landscape. Now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, My Holiday Wish List by Dr. Lice Jenkins. Lately I'm focusing on finding the perfect gifts for our family and our friends and family members. I make lists I rush through stores. I order online, all in the hopes that I can offer a gift that conveys my feelings. Yes, cue the music and the scent of baking cookies. This holiday season, I'm after perfection. I'm often on the receiving end of gardening gifts, which I gratefully accept and swiftly acknowledge with a handwritten thank you note. But after a recent conversation with my husband, I am reminded that civilians should not give gardening gifts. Responding to his inquiry this year, I asked for an Euskaphis japonica. His blank look told me it's not likely to appear in my stocking. But what I really want this year is something no one can give me. Loose, well-drained soil. What gardener in the Piedmont hasn't dreamed of rich, dark, crumbly soil that water just flows through at just the right rate? A holiday wish indeed. When we moved to our house 5 years ago, I confronted hard, bare, compacted clay soil and immediately set out to build up something that could sustain my plants. It takes Mother Nature 10,000 years to create 1 inch of topsoil, but I'm in a hurry, and thankfully I have powerful allies, the experts at the NC State Cooperative Extension Service. After attending a class by Rhonda Sherman, solid waste specialist at NC State Cooperative Extension, I got hooked on vermicomposting. It uses earthworms and other microorganisms to break down organic matter, also known as my kitchen scraps, transforming it into a wonderful amendment for my soil. The internet delivered additional information as I set up my home vermicomposting system. A great place to start is composting.ces.ncsu.edu. You could also check out Rhonda's new book, The Worm Farmer's Handbook. Try suggesting that as a gift to your civilian gift givers, and you'll end up with socks. Stick close to other gardeners for this one. Loose, well-drained soil is the gardening gift that keeps giving and worth pursuing. While we were spared the flooding brought by Hurricane Florence, we've had a wet fall. As I write this, the rainfall recorded at RDU is 6.16 inches above normal. It has not arrived in ideal 1-inch per week increments. Instead, it has often crashed down, delivering a few inches in an hour. Unabsorbed rain runs off, causing erosion and carrying sediment into the creeks, often resulting in environmental problems we collectively suffer. Persistence with my soil project has begun to pay off. Our landscape is healthy and pest-free. Summer requires little supplemental watering, and planting beds have endured some heavy rains this year without serious damage. While not quite the soil of my dreams, it no longer resembles the rock-hard clay present when we moved in. Sometimes the best gifts in life are those you work for, ones that money cannot buy. As for the Euskaphis japonica I am dreaming of, I'll have to buy it myself. Now from Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. Have you shrubs or perennials that are borderline hardy? A New Hampshire gardener placed large rocks to the northwest of his tender heathers on a south-facing bank. In summer, the rocks add a pleasing design element to the garden. In winter, they absorb the sun's heat in the day and retain some of that heat at night. They also protect the plants from chill northwest winds. Put bales of hay around tender plants to protect them in the winter. strawberry plants need winter protection. Save weeding headaches next season by using a weed-free winter mulch, such as pine needles. You can give plants a dusting of mulch after the first few light frosts, but wait until the temperature drops to 20 degrees Fahrenheit before applying it to a depth of 3 or 4 inches. By this time, plants will have hardened off. Remove mulch in the spring, but keep it in the alleys between the plants to do double duty as weed smotherer and as a handy covering for blossoms when a late frost threatens. Black plastic has freed me from hours of weeding. I never used to finish that chore, explains a Massachusetts gardener. I resisted black plastic because it looked so awful. But we put dirt along the edges and scatter some on top, and that helps. We use 3-foot-wide rolls in our entire vegetable garden. We plant a row, lay the plastic, anchor the edges with dirt, plant another row, and so on. The weeding has always had hung over me. Now, I just hand weed in the row itself, and we have more time to canoe or play tennis. Warning. If you have snakes in your area, they may find the black plastic and crawl under it. They love the extra heat there. And do your musk melons sometimes taste like squash? For increased sweetness, plant through black plastic. It will heat up the soil several degrees, and that often makes the difference between tasteless and first-rate melons. And just so you know, peppers respond best to dark-colored mulches, and carrots love coffee grounds applied sparingly. Add a touch of lime to offset acidity. Around fruit trees, fashion a trunk guard of hardware cloth to keep mice from nibbling. Leave an airspace next to the trunk. Spread a thick layer of newspaper to the drip line of the branches and cover generously with hey.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.